Okay. Naše jeans.
The feminine community,
the wives of the cowherd men,
After hearing,
Mudita became very glad. Yashodaya of Malishoda. Suta Udbhava, the birth of the male child. Atmana, first loving. Bhushayam Chakra, dressed very nicely.
To attend the festival.
Vastra akalpa anjana adivi. With proper dress. Ornaments.
Black ointment.
And so on. Shishi Radhavaloka Nandaki. Translation. The gopi wives of the cowherd men were very pleased to hear that Mother Yashoda had given birth to a son, and they began to decorate themselves very nicely with proper dresses, ornaments, black ointment for the eyes, and so on. There is no purport to this verse, so we will read text 10. Navakum kuma kim jauka mukha pankaja utaya balavis twavitam jak mo pritu shonyas chalat cha. Their lotus-like faces, extraordinarily beautiful, being decorated with saffron and newly grown kumkum, the wives of the cowherd men hurried to the house of Mother Yashoda with presentations in their hands. Because of natural beauty, the wives had full hips and full breasts, which loomed as they hurried along. The cowherd men and women in the villages lived a very natural life, and the women developed a natural feminine beauty with full hips and breasts. Because women in modern civilization do not live naturally, their hips and breasts do not develop this natural fullness. Because of artificial living, women have lost their natural beauty, although they claim to be independent and advanced in material civilization. This description of the village women gives a clear example of the contrast between natural life and the artificial life of a condemned society, such as that of the Western countries, where topless, bottomless beauty may be easily purchased in clubs and shops and for public advertisements. The word balibi indicates that the women were carrying gold coins, jeweled necklaces, nice cloths, newly grown grass, sandalwood pulp, flower garlands, and similar offerings on plates made of gold. Such offerings are called bali. The words, twari tam jagmu, indicate how happy the village women were to understand that Lady Yashoda had given birth to a wonderful child known as Krishna. I'll read both verses again. Rupascha karanya mudita yashodaya sato param atmana mushayam chakruar astrakal panjanahadvi. The godly wives of the cowherd men were very pleased to hear that Mother Yashoda had given birth to a son. And they began to decorate themselves very nicely with proper dresses, ornaments, black ointment for the eyes, and so on. Nada kumkuma kinjalka, mukha pankaja utaya, balabi svalitam jagmu, vritu shonyas chalat kucha. Their lotus-like faces, extraordinarily beautiful, being decorated with saffron and newly grown kumkum. The wives of the cowherd men hurried to the house of Mother Yashoda with presentations in their hands. Because of natural beauty, the wives had full hips and full breasts, which moved as they hurried along. A very beautiful description, and it continues. And it was there also before these verses of the beauty and natural opulence of Vrindavan. Of course, it's broader than that also. It is the beauty and natural opulence of life in Krishna consciousness and communities, people and communities who are Krishna conscious. Natural beauty, not some artificial plastic beauty. Plastic beauty. Like here is described Balibi, that the women were carrying gold coins, jeweled necklaces, and various other things on plates made of gold. This is opulent, this is extreme opulence by our standards. If anyone has any gold, they're not going to make it into a plate. You know, they'll get some ceramic or at best stainless steel, usually, or even paper, sometimes under certain circumstances, but this is obviously not natural opulence, but gold plates or Hare Krishna. If you use the gold for plates, then what do you use to decorate yourself? And even we read that the higher classes, the wealthy classes, the Kshatriyas perhaps particularly, they would often, with their gold plates, eat a meal, and when they finished the meal, throw away the plates. And it was not considered that this is just some sort of craziness or something of that sort. It was considered natural. Of course, not that the common plates would then just go into the rubbish bin and the rubbish truck would come and pick it up and dump it in the rubbish dump. No, others with lucid afterwards. Lastly, but they saw things like this and they did things like this. So, this is natural occurrence. Nowadays, why do we have paper plates? Of course, I know, or I assume, that here we also use paper plates on Sundays and for special festive occasions and so on. But for your average person, why would they use paper plates? Because they want to save money. And what do they want to do with the money they've saved? They want to use it for themselves. Some higher, they would say, higher purpose of enjoyment. At best, they will have some stainless steel, some high, sort of supposedly high class ceramic china like that, which is not high class, actually, but in their minds, perhaps some wedge wood. I don't know if you're familiar with wedge wood. It's a type of ceramic, a make of ceramic things, plates, things like that, which are hand painted and very expensive. So, you know, at the very most, if they're perhaps royalty or extremely wealthy, they might get that sort of plate. But otherwise, save money for our greater sense gratification in some other area of our life. We will save money here to spend it there. And even here, of course, the description is of immediately after Lord Krishna's appearance that he took birth or appeared, and then, and now, there is a celebration to welcome him. Yeah, just a celebration. A new child is born. How wonderful. And people were giving away these things, as Prabhupada says, gold coins, jewel necklaces, and various other things, nice cloths, and so on and so forth, on plates made of gold. And, you know, as far as they're aware, they gave them on the plates made of gold, and they didn't ask for the plates back. Sometimes this also happens. We visit someone's house. They give some donation or some offering. Sometimes they give some rice, uncooked rice, and things like this on a plate. And they may not say it, but they expect the plate back. It's a stainless steel plate, usually. So you put it in some little plastic bag or something, and give them the plate back, and they don't say, no, 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 you keep the plate, they take the plate back. So, you know, such is life. Such is life in Kali Yuga. Of course, it is also true that in many cases, many families, when a child is born, a new child is born, then it is a happy occasion. In so many cases, this is a fact, that the parents and their family members are happy and it's a joyful event. But of course we know that also it is not always like that. People are using contraceptive things of different types. And they may say, in order to have a planned family, so we can look after the children, you know, in proper ways and things like this. But really, you know, we scratch beneath the surface of the argument that it is essentially that we want to gratify our senses through this sex life. And if sometimes it happens that if somehow, despite all these pills and whatnot to avoid having children, if somehow a child is born, sometimes they would refer to that child as our little mistake. This is not uncommon. Our little mistake. Yes. The unexpected child. Actually means unwanted. That's what it means. Because, you know, sex life after all is for having children, whatever pleasures there may be, in the process are basically incidental, in as much as eating food is essentially for the maintenance of the body, and the pleasures of eating are basically incidental, really. Although, of course, there is a culture of preparing those things nicely. But it is not that that is the end. It is really the process for maintaining body and soul together. Yes, so if a child is an accident, sometimes they say an accident, sometimes they say a mistake, as we mentioned, then the real point is, that as far as they're concerned, the activity itself is one of pleasure. That's what it is. And if a child should come, that's just not part of the program, at least in so many cases. Yeah. And therefore, such children coming in these ways, under these circumstances, how can we expect that natural affection will be there? One of our godbrothers told me, a very prominent devotee actually, that when on his 21st birthday, his maternal grandmother, the mother of his mother, told him that, "I have something to tell you today. I've been waiting, but today I'm going to tell you. That when your mother, my daughter, was pregnant with you, she wanted to abort you, but I convinced her not to." And that devotee said that it changed his perspective of his mother. Yeah. And his sort of emotions and so on for his mother. And he became a devotee anyway. So like this mother saying here, that there is a natural civilization and then there is an artificial civilization. In a natural civilization, well, of course, ultimately, a truly natural civilization will be based on the fact that actually we are all eternal spiritual beings, spirit souls, and as such we are all eternal servants of Krishna. And these bodies, we are not these bodies. But rather these bodies are vehicles. Of course, in another sense, they are just implications because of our lack of Krishna consciousness. But one way or the other, we have them. So, therefore, see, we are actually eternal spiritual persons, is what we are. We are devotees. Then we will use these bodies to make the best use of a bad bargain. We will use these bodies in that service to Krishna. And in doing so, we will live in a materially natural way. Where we will eat those types of foods which are actually natural and proper. And we will do all these things, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, all these things in ways which are natural and proper, like those said. And we will derive our incomes, we will maintain ourselves and our dependence by in natural and proper ways, and our recreation, whatever that may be, will also be natural and proper. And so on like this. And in this way you have a natural civilization. And in this way, everything, everyone becomes happy. Everyone becomes happy. In Bhagavad Gita, of course, Lord Krishna talks about different types of happiness in the moments. Happiness in goodness. Krishna expresses that in very interesting terms, actually. It may seem like poison at first, but in the end it's like nectar. Whereas happiness in the moment of passion is like nectar at first, but it turns to poison. And happiness in tamagun, the mode of ignorance, is just suffering from beginning to end. Such is life in the material world. So anyway, because the basic nature of the conditioned soul is one of actually mixed ignorance and passion, really. Why are we here in this world? Because we became envious of Krishna. Envy is not a quality even of goodness. Really, it's a quality of passion, ignorance like that. And ultimately becomes one of ignorance as it develops. And as such, we decided we want to enjoy. Why is he enjoying? Why is everyone doing everything for him? What about us? This is essentially passion. Well, it's ignorance also, but it really means passion, that we are the enjoyers. Ishvaroham Ahambhogi. Lord Krishna explains also in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So in that sense, the quote-unquote natural tendencies of the conditioned souls are more towards passion and ignorance. And goodness, really goodness is only there when the conditioned soul is starting, at least to some degree, to become free from those fundamental faults of envy of Krishna and the desire to enjoy independently. Only when a person is to some degree becoming free from those things can they come to goodness. Want to speak of transcendence, but even to come to goodness. So this way of knowing goodness is a very interesting condition, actually. It's not, in one sense, of course, it's just part of the whole material arrangement. But there are many subtleties involved in the mode of goodness. So in Vrindavan, and in a natural Vaishnava society, things are like that. People now, of course, as we said, they're in passion and ignorance. And the ones who are really making progress, they're the ones who are more in passion. Because the ones who are more in ignorance, they just don't bother. So those in passion, they're driven by that desire to enjoy. So they have molded and they are continuing to mold the current day society in these terms. Yes, in these terms. So the whole idea is increase. enjoyment. Increase enjoyment. By one means or another. Illicit sex life. In different ways, all sorts of propaganda mentions, topless, bottomless clubs and places of that sort. But it doesn't end there at all. We will not go into it, but I'm sure you're aware it's a very diverse subject. And those passionate people have and are continuing to use their creativity, their creative intelligence, to see how to increase it and diversify it further. And eating, same idea. Of course, according to the system, and to some degree it's still existent in India, although it's reducing all the time. You eat foods which are in season in your area. But when I go to Vrindavan now, just near where we stay, it's one little shop, and there you can buy fruit juices from South Africa. So I leave South Africa and drink fruit juice from South Africa. And so on and so forth. Like this. Yes, but this is artificial. This is not natural. And they're using their creative intelligence in passion for these things. And it's certainly in the ways, too. Yes, the idea is increase the enjoyment. They are thinking. And increase it quickly. This is passion. They're thinking that if we do things like maintain the ecology and not, you know, develop agro-industry and things like this, they're thinking that why should we bother? You know, we're not going to get our pleasure now. And we're not going to get pleasure like that pleasure. Those big pleasures. So this is all about passion. But as a result, as Prabhupada points out here, everything simply deteriorates. Like the opulence, for example. Little Krishna and the other children. Little Krishna and the other children. They would just run around. They would run around wearing jewelry. Krishna would have earrings on. Shishi Radhikalakarata ki. Krishna would run around with earrings on, with necklaces on, perhaps with ankle bells on, maybe with some bangles like this. Krishna would run around. And those ornaments would not be plastic from Shanghai. Used to be Taiwan, now it's Shanghai. Yeah. You know, when I was young, anything from America was considered, at least in New Zealand, amongst those of kind of English descent, anything from America was considered rubbish. Oh, yeah. And American cars were called Yank tanks. Anything from Japan was considered just untouchable. You couldn't even consider it. It's just too low. But now, you know, people, they advertise made in Japan. They're not in China. This is made in Japan. What to speak of made in America? I think it's rare to find things like that. you may find designed in America, made in Shanghai. So they, the children, well, and these are my ships, they're not Kshatriyas. The children, preschool, little children, and we all know children are not responsible very much, but they're wearing these valuable gems and gold. Every day as they play in the dust. So what are the adults wearing? And how do the actually rich people live? And even the Vaishyas are just giving away valuable things on plates of gold and not asking for the plates back. This is just, it's another dimension altogether. It's another dimension. And people today, the passionate people of today, they would consider, if they believed it, they would consider it wasteful. But it's not. This is what these things are for. This is how people are meant to live. In Krishna consciousness, not just in material consciousness, but in Krishna consciousness. So actually this Krishna consciousness movement is really designed to, some might say, take society back to the good old days, but really take society forward. Society has gone back in that sense, qualitatively, to become a plastic society. You know, even the motor cars, even the expensive motor cars, so many parts are made of plastic. Yeah, the aeroplanes, anyway. So, it's not really a matter of, let's go back to the old days when things were better, although they were better in the old days. But the point is that qualitatively, we have to take society forward to a condition which is better, which is more proper. This is what we have to do. Sometimes people have this idea of, you know, let's go back to when things were better, the good old days. But there, of course, there are many flaws in that idea, but one flaw in it is that in people's minds, there is, you know, just a very time-bound types of parameters and considerations involved in what they're doing. We're going back. And as you go back, unless you go to the Vedic times, but otherwise there are many shortcomings, actually, in how things were done previously, even though some things would be better. So we don't want to really just go back to the good old days, but we want to have a way of life which is spiritual and spiritually conducive and materially in goodness, in this way positive all round. This is Krishna consciousness. Not just the consumer way of life. I don't know if I mentioned when I was here last time, I may have, because it struck me very deeply. When we were having the GBC meetings in Mayapur in February, some devotees from Hungary made a presentation about, you could say self-sufficiency, self-sufficient communities in Krishna consciousness, which they are doing or trying to do there. It's very, very interesting. And in the course of making their presentation to the GBC body, they presented some facts and figures and things like this. And one part of that was that a scientific calculation considered to be mathematically fairly accurate about the facilities that the world, this planet, has, how much land which can be used, how it's being used at present, and, you know, how many people can be maintained from that. So their calculation showed that if everybody lived and consumed and exploited and tried to use the resources of this planet, like the Americans, which either directly or indirectly is the idea, actually. Essentially, in effect, everyone is trying to become, every nation is trying to become an America. Really. So if every nation and every person was engaged in consuming and utilizing facilities like America, like your average American person in the street, then we will need 6 planets. We will need 6 planets. And it is only, you could say, or they would say, fortunately, that some nations are living in abject poverty for the time being, that, you know, the Americans are able to go on living like that. Because otherwise, if everyone comes to that point, the whole society will collapse completely and the majority of people will die. Yeah. Like 80% or something of the population will die. Anyway, these are some warnings of doom and gloom. But the fact is that Krishna consciousness is not just another nice religious spiritual thing to be nice and be good and happy and all that. Although it is also nice and makes you happy. But Krishna consciousness is a scientific process for changing the world. This is our goal. Not just to have a nice temple or build a nice temple and, you know, function like that. This is not our goal. Ultimately, of course, you know, there are goals in that regard, but our real goal, final goal, is to change the world. Prabhupada said, Prabhupada was asked once, do you have any problems? Prabhupada said, I have no problems. Prabhupada said, I have one problem, actually. I cannot think small. So, this is the nature of the very advanced devotees. They cannot think small, because they know Krishna consciousness is not just for small. Although it can be applied on very small, just one person, on that scale. But actually, ultimately, Krishna consciousness is to change the world. And this is part of it. To change the lifestyle. To change the orientation of the society. The whole society. Yeah. And the thing is, if we do that, despite the feelings of the Americans or the Westerners or the materialists, despite the fears of the materialists, that if we, they would then go back to some sort of practically prehistoric condition, we're going to end up like cavemen or, you know, we're going to end up in some severely compromised condition. According to the descriptions we have here from 5,000 years ago, this is a false fear, a false dilemma, a false dilemma. Yeah. In the science of argument, there is there are a number of types of false arguments which people use, either consciously or usually unconsciously, to try to substantiate their points. One such thing is called a false dilemma. That if we do this, this is going to happen. Actually, it's probably not going to happen, or unlikely, but they try to present very strongly. And then people think, oh, yes, okay. So then they don't do that thing. It's a false dilemma. So yes, it is a false dilemma to think that if we adopt particularly the standards of Krishna consciousness and the lifestyle, that our enjoyment is going to reduce. Our happiness is going to reduce. And rather, we'll be less comfortable, less safe, our health will be worse. And of course, the main thing is our happiness will be less. And we don't want that. So therefore, let us carry on. And therefore, even devotees who are working, householders and others who are working to make a living for the boss, for some organization of non-devotees, when they're doing it, you know, they may feel happy, oh, I've got a good job, good money, and so on like that. Okay, we know they have to work. That's acceptable. But they should be aware that by doing this, even though I need to, I am actually supporting and contributing to the problem which my life, really, Krishna consciousness, is opposed to. So, you know, that's a dilemma, isn't it? So it's not just happy days, I got a good job. Even though that's okay, it helps. It helps if you get a relatively good job and you don't have to work so hard and you get more money, particularly if you use it in Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, we should know I am working for an organization which is exploiting this material nature and encouraging the principles of Kali Yuga and furthering those principles. That's the reality. So therefore, the devotees, it is sort of, even though they may have to do that, but it is with a mood of a certain amount of regret that I have to do it. And if possible, I would get out of it and do something else, which is more directly connected with improving the situation. So yes, in the times of Krishna, it wasn't just Krishna who was decorated so nicely and, you know, they later, I think later we'll read how when he reached a certain point, they did abhishek for him. Milk, ghee, yogurt, and things like this, honey. They bathed him. Not because he was God, but because he was a child. He was a new child, and they were celebrating. Yeah. It wasn't just for the law. In European history, there are some monarchs who used to take bath in milk. Some of the royalty, going back some hundreds of years, they would sometimes take bath in milk, which nowadays is considered, you know, an extravagance or something like that. But it was normal. It was normal. It was not some strange thing or something like that. So these are some thoughts on the subject. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Shiva Prabhupada ki jai.